differently. Someone was willing to see things in a new way. In the late 70s and early 80s, these things called personal computers started to come about. And one of the people that was a part of the very early days, the pioneering days, of seeing these things called computers start to take place, start to come into people's homes, was a guy by the name of Steve Jobs. Now, you've probably heard of him. And Steve Jobs was unique for all those other people that were involved in those pioneering days. And he was unique in three different ways. He saw things differently in three different ways. The first thing he saw, that at the time, PCs that were trying to be sold to be put into homes were way too complex for the average home user. They weren't accessible for most people. He also saw that there needed to be integration between the hardware, the actual machine, and the software, the programs that run the machine. And all the others at the time had gone off in separate paths, where some people specialised in hardware, others specialised in software. But Steve Jobs saw the need for there to be a combination of both, for the one company to do both, so that there was good integration. He also realised that personal computers of the late 70s and early 80s were extraordinarily ugly looking machines. And if people were going to put them in their homes, they're going to hide them up in a corner somewhere or in a study away, because people wouldn't have wanted these ugly machines to be on display. Now, whatever you want to think of Apple products, and I know different people have different opinions about Apple, and I'm a convert, I've got to say. But the one thing about Apple that has been a significant part of their entire history is that their machines are easy to use, they're reliable, and they're beautiful to look at. And because Steve Jobs brought a new way of thinking to the IT industry, it totally redefined it. And whether you're looking at a PC, whether you're looking at a phone, or whether you're looking at what we now know as tablets, Steve Jobs was instrumental in both the creation of those, and he could see the need for it before others could. I found myself thinking, when the tablets first came on the market, the iPads and so on, there's no need for these things. There's no need. What can a tablet do that a phone can't do or a notebook computer can't do? There's no need. But I was wrong. So many people now have tablets and swear by them. We've got one in our own home, believe it or not. And the fact is that Steve Jobs could see things before others. He had a new way of thinking, a different way of thinking about things. Today our focus, as we look at this passage from John chapter 1, verse 43 to 51, is that as followers of Jesus, we need to think in a new way. We need to adopt a new way of thinking. And this passage is a continuation of a theme that we've been developing the last few weeks that we're in John, a theme of looking at what does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus? What does a follower of Jesus actually look like? And what we're looking at the moment is the first week of Jesus' public life. Starts in John chapter 1, verse 19, and goes through to John chapter 2, to verse 12. The first 7 days of Jesus' public life, his ministry. And when we looked at day one, when we saw that John the Baptist was talking about Jesus, we saw that if you're going to be a follower of Jesus, you're going to be his disciples, you need to engage in issues of justice. When we looked at day two and we saw that John the Baptist handed over to Jesus, handed over his disciples, handed over his ministry, handed over his leadership, less of me, more of him. We saw that to be a follower of Jesus, you need to embrace and act with humility. Then in day three and four, which is what we looked at last week, which told the story of Andrew and John and Simon Peter and their first encounter with Jesus, we learned that to be his disciple, you need to create time and space to be with Jesus. And so today, we're in day five. And in fact, this story in some ways is similar to the story that we looked at last week. It's telling the story of some of Jesus' disciples' first encounter with him. And as I've already said, what we get out of today's message is that discipleship means we think differently. We think in a new way about everything. Everything we do, everything we think. So in verse 43 to 45, we read about Philip encountering Jesus and having to go off and tell Nathanael. And it's a continuation of a theme that we looked at last week where Andrew found out about Jesus, had to go and tell his brother Peter. And we talked about how when discipleship happens, witness will be the result. When you encounter Jesus, when you meet with him, you can't help but be a witness to others. Swiss theologian F.L. Godet said, "One lighted torch serves to light another." But we're not going to spend too much time on that today because we looked at it more last week. And if you weren't here last week, then you can get the message either from Wes up the back or on our Facebook group. But today we read about Philip and Nathanael. And what's interesting is that Philip is talked about early on, but then Nathanael seems to take centre stage with Jesus. And it's interesting in the fact that Nathanael is only mentioned one other time in the entire Bible, in John chapter 21. So who is this Nathanael? We don't really know. He's not listed anywhere else as being one of Jesus' 12 disciples. Though in the other three Gospels, whenever Philip is talked about, a character by the name of Bartholomew is talked about. And it's possible that Bartholomew and Nathanael are the same person, but we don't really know. What we do know is that in terms of biblical figures, Nathanael's a pretty insignificant character. He doesn't get the profile that a Peter does, or a John, or a John the Baptist, or the Apostle Paul. He's only mentioned twice, and if him and Bartholomew are the same person, only mentioned about a dozen times, just in passing. And yet Jesus uses this interaction that he had with Nathanael and the fact that John records it to highlight something that was amazing. Something that if we fully grasp, we can't help but say, wow. How often does God use the seemingly insignificant to do the amazing? He took a slave and a prisoner in Joseph and made him the prime minister of Egypt. He took a shepherd with a stutter called Moses and made him the leader of God's chosen people, the Israelites. He took another shepherd who was a boy called David and made him a king. He took a fisherman with a hot temper and became Peter, who God used to start the church. And he saw a town in the back blocks of Galilee called Nazareth, and he said, "That's where the Son of God's going to grow up." God turns up in the most unlikely of places, and God uses the most unlikely people. So this new way of thinking looks for God to show up through unexpected people and in unexpected places. In verse 46, the passage takes on an almost humorous form, and the way in which Dave read it really captured what I think was happening in this passage. When Nathanael says, "Can anything good come from Nazareth?" You see, Nathanael came from a town called Bethsaida, which was just a little way away from Nazareth. And it was highly likely that there was a bit of competition that happened between these two towns, a bit of jealousy even. If you came from Bethsaida, nothing good can come from Nazareth. And I guess it's a bit like some of us might say, I wouldn't say this, but some of us might say, can anything good come from Sunbury? I actually asked Kate the question this week. I said, can anything good come from Sunbury? And there was a long pause and silence. And eventually we got there and we talked about it. But I did a bit of research, you see, because us people come from Gisborne, not me, but I've tended to notice that we look down our noses a little bit. We think we're somehow a bit better than those that come from Sunbury. But I looked into it. I love cricket, and Sunbury was the birthplace of the Ashes. There's some great wineries in Sunbury and in the area of Sunbury. In fact, some of those wineries have better reputations than wineries elsewhere in the Macedon Ranges. Some of the best wineries in the Macedon Ranges are in Sunbury or in that area. I want to give a little plug for the Just Planet Cafe. It's a cafe in Sunbury. I can't remember the town. Katrina, you're nodding your head, so you've been there. So go and talk to Katrina about where you're at. Good coffee. In fact, you get better coffee at Just Planet Cafe than you do anywhere in Gisborne, except... Oh, I better be careful. Just in my opinion. Just Planet Cafe actually is a shop front for a church plant that's happening. Really interesting work that's happening behind the doors of Just Planet Cafe. Just up the road in Buller, there's the Living Legends Home of Rest for Champion Horses. I haven't been there yet, but I'm planning on going there to spend some time with some famous racehorses. I asked Dave Preslocki, who lives in Sunbury, earlier today. I said, Dave, what's the best thing about living in Sunbury? And he talked for a while and eventually said, it's the people. It's the people that are the best thing. And you look at this church, you've got the Huggins, you've got the Cannons, you've got the Woods, you've got the Forests, the Danielics, the Preslockis. Is there anyone I've forgotten? Ah, yes, the Townsends. Good people come from Sunbury. But don't take my word for it. If you really want to experience Sunbury and all that it has to offer, what do you have to do? You have to come and see. Come and see. Not Google it. Come and see it. Philip says to Nathaniel, you've got to come and see. You've got to come and see this Jesus. To discover all that Sunbury has to offer, you have to see it. You have to smell it. You have to hear it. You have to touch it. You have to taste it. Well, at least the food and the good things that come out of there. See, King David was onto something in Psalm 34, verse 8, when he said, taste and see that the Lord is good. What's he saying? Taste and see. See, God's not some abstract idea out here. This is a God we experience. This is a God we encounter. This is a God that our senses allow us to get to know, to grow closer towards. You see, our faith is not one that is lived vicariously through someone else. And you do see this from time to time. It may be a husband that thinks, my wife has a solid faith and so I'll just sort of follow along in her shadow. Or it may be a wife that says that. It may be that some people live their faith through a mentor or a key person that has influenced them. And as long as I sort of know them, I'll be okay. Maybe it's your minister, heaven forbid. It's got to be our own faith. You see, we need to come and see. We need to experience and encounter God. You see, this new way of thinking expects God to reveal himself to us. And in verse 47 to 51, we read what I think is this stunning interaction between Nathanael and Jesus. And as Nathanael comes towards Jesus, Jesus describes Nathanael as one who is without deceit. And then Nathanael responds to Jesus' statement with, how do you know me? And then Jesus just refers to a time when Nathanael was sitting under a fig tree. and he describes that time to Nathanael. What's happening in this interaction? We see the fig tree for the Israelite was a place traditionally where you'd go to pray and go and reflect on the things of God. Now, we don't know for sure that Nathanael was praying. It doesn't say that in the text, but we can take a guess that he may well have been. And like a lot of Jews of his time, we can probably take a guess that he may well have been praying for the coming of the Messiah. And so Jesus, because he's God, is able to describe this time that had happened before, in the moments before Jesus was on the scene and meeting with Nathanael, when Nathanael was crying out to God, we think. And it was enough for Nathanael to recognize who Jesus was. He says, Rabbi. For Nathanael to give Jesus the term Rabbi, to refer to him as Rabbi, was a sign of respect. A sign that you are a teacher and I need to learn from you. He then says, Rabbi, Son of God. With one encounter, and he's got it. It took other disciples a lot longer. Nathanael got it, one encounter. Son of God. He knew who Jesus was. King of Israel, he said. King of Israel. He understood Jesus' rightful position. Stunning. From that encounter that you can understand that he got that. For Nathanael, it was the prophetic insight of Jesus, of being able to describe Nathanael sitting under the fig tree, that was enough for Nathanael to believe. And then what does Jesus say to him? Basically, he says, you haven't seen anything yet. You'll see greater things than this. You're going to see heaven opened. You'll see angels descending and ascending on the Son of Man. What? Does that sound a bit strange to you? What Jesus is talking about, and why I think John has included this as part of the passage, is referencing another man's story of his encounter with God. It was a man who, unlike Nathanael, was prone to deceive. So Jacob, who we read about in the Old Testament, Genesis chapter 25 and onwards, had tricked his twin brother out of his birthright. He tricked his twin brother off his father's blessing. Even when Jacob was born, he came out clasping the heel of his brother Esau, trying to trip him up. And eventually Jacob's treachery caught up with him. Esau was on his tail. His life was under threat. On the run, he found a place to rest. He lied down. He went to sleep. And he had a dream. You can read about it in Genesis chapter 28. But in this dream, what is described is that Jacob saw heaven opened up. He saw angels descending and ascending on a ladder. It was an experience of such power that Jacob's life was never the same again. In fact, he'd go on and he'd be renamed Israel. He would become the father of God's chosen people. For the ancient Israelites, the story of Jacob's ladder, the dream of Jacob's ladder, had great significance, because it showed to them that their God was a God who revealed himself. It showed them that their God was a God whose presence was with him. See, in the ancient Israelite religion, this story of Jacob's ladder became synonymous with their understanding of worshipping God. That is, wherever God pitched his tent, wherever God tabernacled, God's presence was there. Eventually, the tabernacle would become the temple, the earthly place that God resided. And what John is doing in this last part of chapter 1 is he's setting us up for the next three chapters, John chapter 2 to 4. And it reveals that Jesus has come to demonstrate a new way, a new path to encountering God. No longer was it going to be through a strict, legalistic interpretation of the religion, even a misrepresentation by the religious leaders of the day that required the Jews to conform to all these laws and rules about how they were to approach God. Jesus was opening up a new way. A new way in which God was accessible to all. A new way that promoted grace and forgiveness over laws and legalism. A new way in which heaven would be open to all, where heaven and earth were opened up to each other. You see, Jacob's ladder, the tabernacle and the temple are signposts to the new way. But what Jesus was saying to Nathanael, and what I think he's saying to us today, is that if you follow me, you'll be able to see what it looks like when heaven and earth are opened up to each other. You see, when we choose to follow Jesus, our eyes are opened up to eternity. It's really easy to say that, but it has massive, massive implications for how we live our lives. Imagine the best you can what heaven's like. What's heaven like? When I think of heaven, and I read my Bible, I'm influenced by what the Bible says about heaven. I think of healing. I think of a time where there's no more physical pain. I think of a time where there's no more emotional pain. I think of wholeness, where emotionally we are exactly how we're created to be. There's no fear, there's no doubt, there's no worry. I think of purity in relationships, where there's deep connection with each other and with God. I think of a restoration of creation, where the damage that's been done to our world is made right again. Jesus says, I'm creating a new heaven and a new earth. You see, when heaven and earth are opened up to each other, when our eyes are opened up to eternity, it impacts how we live our lives. You see, our lives are meant to be a little bit like a trailer of a movie, a blockbuster movie that's coming up. And our lives are meant to reflect what it's going to be like when heaven comes. So how does it change us? How does it affect our thinking? If heaven is about healing, how can I bring healing to people while I'm here on earth? If heaven is about wholeness, how can I help people that aren't experiencing any sense of wholeness at the moment? If heaven is about pure relationships, how can I model to others what healthy relationships look like, where forgiveness is in operation? If heaven is about the restoration of creation, how can I live my life in such a way that I'm restoring creation rather than damaging it? You see, as we start to live our lives in a way that reflects what is going to happen in heaven, we're completely different. We're changed. The new way of thinking means that we now live our lives with the reality of heaven in our minds. So what does this new way of thinking mean? Well, we expect Jesus. We expect God to show up. And often when someone's preaching, and I'll do it myself occasionally, we open up an invitation for people to come to the platform. And that's not a bad thing. God can show up here at the platform. sometimes we start to think that's the only way God shows up. And we start to think that God is just about what happens here on a Sunday morning. What happens on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and so on. I'm not expecting God to show up in those places, in those times. But if we're living our lives that in a way that reflects the future reality of heaven, our ears and our eyes will start to be opened up to the work that God is already doing in our midst. Because God is at work. God is at work in the lives of those around us. God is already at work in our community, in our town, in Sunbury, and in other places. And we start to think about what does heaven look like in the now? How does that impact my behaviour now? We start to see God at work and what's God doing. So rather than us trying to manufacture something, we're just jumping on board with what God is already doing. Now to do this requires, first of all, prayer. Got to pray. Got to say, God, open my eyes to what you are doing. Help me live in a way that reflects what heaven's going to be like in the now. Got to practice. Best way of learning is doing. And you also need to get skilled up. And I want to use this opportunity as a way of promoting what we're calling our Connect training, which is happening in the month of October. From the second Tuesday of October for 4 weeks, and then we're catching up one more week in November. And what the Connect training, it's going to be on a Tuesday night, 7:15 I think. Details will be out soon. What the Connect training is about, it's about helping us to open our eyes and our ears to what God is already doing in the lives of those people around us. I did this training about 18 years ago. The training's actually a lot better now, though. Martin, who does it, has revised it and made it a lot better. I still use this training most days of my life. The skills that it's taught me to give me the eyes and ears for what God is already doing around me. So I want to encourage you to consider doing that. If you can give up 4 Tuesday nights in October and then one more mid-November, then I'd love you to come and be a part of that. I'm going to pray now, and then I think we'll sing one last song, though. You're right, we're right to do that. And then at the end of the service, of course, you're more than welcome to come and have prayer. If there's anything that you need prayer for, we'd love to pray for you. But what I'm really interested in today, what I really want to challenge you with today, is what does living out the future reality of heaven look like for you now? Let's pray. Lord, I just want to thank you for today, and thank you for the sense of your presence that's been with us today. And Lord, the issues that we've dealt with today are somewhat complex, but I believe incredibly profound. As we begin to understand that your salvation for us is not just a ticket into heaven, but the salvation that you offer starts in the here and now. And that it enables us to open our eyes up to eternity and to start living our lives in such a way that we are ourselves tasting what heaven is like, what being with you is like, that we're giving an example to others, a little snapshot, a movie trailer of what heaven is like, being an example, being your ambassador. And Lord, I want to pray for each one of us that are here today that you'd be helping us to think in this new way. what you said to Nathaniel and what you've promised to us is staggering and it's amazing. That you open up heaven and earth. That through knowing you, we have access to God the Father. Angels from heaven are ascending and descending. We are not alone. And we thank you for that. And Lord, as each of us goes out into our weeks, I pray that you would administer a blessing to us now. A stronger sense of your presence, of encounter, so that we can go out and be like that torch that lights the other, that lights another. I want to pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, David. Just